Deixa eu ver esse celular. Okay, we're set.
Hey, Dr. Leonard gave that course and always called me in to illustrate work in the archives to give the people an idea at least of what it is to engage in research, although research was not in the program of the State Teachers College system at the time.
Would that be an equivalent of the history methods given now?
Yes, that's the history methods. It was the old history, 199, and then it became 201 when we gave graduate work into it. Oh, yes. But we had a peculiar way of working that as a sort of a pro-seminar, which we used for quite a number of years, as long as Dr. Leonard was in charge of it. That is, we would instruct them for some 5 weeks, more or less. And then we would let the student free in order to engage in a research project the rest of the semester. And anybody who was interested in going on for their degrees, he sent to me if they were qualified with a language, because to work in my field requires both French and Spanish, and I always said that if any student knows enough in one to get along to read it, I'll cover him in the other one. As a result of which, there was built up by these excellent students in the 30s that we had, all of whom became the instructors in all of the high schools here, and the principals and the administrators were the students here in the 30s. They wrote their theses. A good many of them under me wrote from my original sources into that under my guidance. And I always sent them up either to Bolton and later Kinnaird at Berkeley, or to USC. To other UCLA later on, where my friends would permit them to continue the same subject for their master's degree. As a result of which, most of the cases there, they got their degrees from Berkeley or USC or from Pomona or from UCLA, but they were sent back to me to guide into them. And they are those in the main, the AB thesis they wrote under me constituted the MAs in the main, and most of it. And one or two of them I have published. So it's understood that they were doing some good work.
This was more or less molding or paving the way for a graduate program, all this work you're doing.
Oh, no question about
it.
Sure. Yeah. Then later on, when we granted the master's degree, then we could carry him through.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And I've had a lot of master's degrees programs, too, that we've had. By that time, we had built up. By the time we were allowed to teach a graduate course in there, the history department had the basic publications for anyone in American history, much better than most of the surrounding institutions. And we were able to do a good job when we got the opportunity to give it. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
So the three of you more or less had built
Oh, yes, we had it. And then we added on to it. Let's see now. As I said, it was during... Well, wait a minute. Let's go back a little bit. We had a lot of the problems in the 30s, that bothered most of the other nations. For example, the peace movement, the Oxford movement, and a good deal of the 30s was taken up by pacifism. None of the ideas of the rebellion of the 50s, but this was the 30s, when we didn't lose the respect we had for education, nor for upbringing, nor family life. But this was radically changed when, of course, Pearl Harbor came, and we were having our troubles then. We had, I don't recall how many students, but we were already, I think, past 4,000 at the time. And the war, of course, took away most of the students, especially the male students, and a good deal of our faculty. As a matter of fact, Dr. Leslie was brought into the Army as an instructor. And I was crippled, and so I wasn't called in. And Leonard and I took over the whole department. And on top of that, a year or two before Pearl Harbor, the junior college was moved up to here, to this campus, and Thomas Greer, one of our former students, was the instructor for them, and he went to war, leaving Leonard and I to take charge of the entire fields of history and political science and sociology. Then in the midst of the war, Dr. Leonard had a heart attack, and for better than a year, I had to take over the work of some, I don't know, I think it was 31 units. And naturally, I could not keep every class, but I tried to keep them going till the end of the semester, and after which then I chose and held on. So I was teaching all of history and all of political science and some sociology for a very short time. Not the major sociology, but the sociology of the junior college for a short time. Into here. That was a big, tremendous job. Then at the very, just before the end of the war, about a year, I got a call from the Army Historical Section. But President Heppner said that the war was practically over and begged me to stay here, which I did. And the war was over a short time later. Now, most of the students of the 30s, of which I could give many examples of my own students in the year, who were just going to school because of the Depression. Nothing else, couldn't get a job. As a matter of fact, in the mid-30s, we had a saying, a popular saying, that those who stayed in college and got their degrees pumped gasoline for Standard Oil, those who copped out pumped gasoline for Shell. And for Union is what we had as a popular saying around here during the time. But they didn't pay too much attention. But right after the war, when we had a tremendous increase in there, and many of our former students came back, they are the ones who became the real teachers and leaders at the present time, are the ones who came back after experiencing the war, became excellent students in that time. During that time, however, I guess there are many things that I could tell of the 30s into there. One of them, of course, that hit us hard, or two of them, is the fact that Dr. Hardy retired after 25 years of service in the air. And Dr. Heppner came in. A good many of us, especially Dr. Leonard and a few of us, were quite scared at the time, because there was a tremendous difference between Hardy and Heppner. Heppner had been trained as a secondary and public school teacher and administrator and brother-in-law of the United States Commissioner of Education, and he made it known that he wanted to become president and went over to the state office before. And when he was chosen, we were afraid. We were afraid for a variety of reasons, which really covers some of the activities of myself during the 30s. As a result of World War I, and when the Army and the others began their famous alpha tests and beta tests and found out how widespread ignorance was in this country, they, and especially up here at Camp Callan, well, it wasn't at Camp Callan at that time. Camp Callan was in the Second World War, but they found the same thing, that the recruits couldn't tell the difference from the right and left and couldn't take commands. And that's what they found out in part, and the psychologists took over with the testing in World War I. They began to reform the curriculum in the school system. For some reason or another, I was a young scholar and still under the influence of real university training into there. And I fought that movement and said that it would eventually ruin the school system, ruin the educational system of this country. It got in into the elementary schools, but I knew that once we trained a generation of teachers into the newer stuff, that we lost the older ones. And it did water down and completely ruin the lower grades. That's when we lost our basic mathematics and our fundamentals and things of that nature in English and in grammar. It got into the high school. I warned that it would get into the colleges. The only reason why it was stopped was the turning of the World War II, which held it back when it was in the high schools into there, but we began to training it. And it hit the colleges after the war, which is our bad problem at the present time, where we are now reaping the results of the 20 or 30 years war.
In fact, now there's a lot of complaints.
Now the reaction has taken place, but it's hard to change because of the generation that was trained in before, who are the teachers of today. And that's what's hurting the problem, and it's hard to change. The nearest, I think and hope that it stopped, because it reached up into the graduate division of the university and even into the professional schools, especially the medical school, which is now being remedied quite rapidly into it. But I remember fighting it as best I can until I just gave up the problem before I got ulcers and so on, which thank God I never did get. But I saw it coming and saw it so clearly. And I hate to say I told you so, but that's exactly was reaping it now. Now that occurred, and we were afraid of it because of what Heppner stood for. And we were afraid that there's a difference between Hardy, who was not the trained educator that Heppner was, into there. And Heppner took over from us and was afraid of it. As a result, and when it came in, he brought in his own high school staff and we were a little bit skeptical about what was going to happen to us at the time. And the truth of the matter was that Heppner used to call, come in the office quite often to me. As an educator on one side, he was excellent, because just before Hardy left, without my knowing it, he had raised me to full professorship, as he had done to several, to two or three PhDs. Just before he raised it to us, it made no difference in the salaries, and I didn't know it for nearly 2 years about it. It's when Heppner, who says rank has to be with salary, came to us, and I got, for the about a year after he was here, I got a raise of more than $800, $900, which was a tremendous raise at that time. At that time, and he got into it. That was coincidental, too, with the founding of the State Employees Association here. No, not the State Employees of the... That happened, too, but not here. Of the Association of College Professors. Mm-hmm. And that, which was... Leonard had a great deal to do with that. And Cameron and a few of the others had to do with the organization of the California State Employees, both of which started in the 1930s, into here. Now, that gave rise to a number of things as well, which made me a strange, I suppose, phenomena of the old school, as I always was called anyway, during that time. After the war, of course, with the increase in the student body, with the widening of our faculty in the history department and so on, we added men quite a number. We added, let me see now, Osborne came in as the first one.
This would be the 1940s?
Oh, he was here before the 1940s. Mm-hmm. Osborne came in really as the fourth member. We had four members. Mm-hmm. Osborne had been a replacement for Leslie when he went off for a year before. And Osborne's field was in the Far East, which is an additional field of us. But now, after the war, he went into political science, and therefore Heppner hired Merrill, John Merrill, and Helen Reagan, Catherine Reagan, to our faculty. And we separated the history and political science, because about that time, and that Osborne went into the political science department. Leonard, although he taught a political science, was in the history department, though. He taught mostly in history, in poli-sci, into there. Then who came next? Oh, yes, right after the war, when Leslie came back, he wanted to bring his friend that he got in the war, Kramer Rofleisch, who was interested in teaching the history, and in his European field. They were associates together during the war, and Kramer Rofleisch became a very important addition to our faculty. As a matter of fact, the best teachers that we had were Leonard, Katie Reagan, and Rofleisch. There's no question about that, hands down, in the department, into here. Then the next one that we added was Webb, which I mentioned earlier, the first one, followed by Ridge. And then to help out Ridge and to make us more specialized, in the field. We got Berge, who was one of our own students before, the young student, and then he, as a matter of fact, Berge got his M.A. on here, and wrote his thesis in, under me, as a matter of fact. But oh, he was in Leslie's seminar during the time. And he was brought in to, by Ridge, and when he got his degree from Berkeley, and he took Ridge's place, and still is here. Let's see who else came in after that to clear up the... I brought in a second Latin Americanist. What's his name? A good one there. He stayed with us only for 2 years. I forgot his name.
Wasn't David Weber?
No,
that later?
No, it's much later. David Weber came in to take Ridge and other places when Berge went up, and Berge in the southwest, and Ridge left us into here. And who else came in? Oh, Fleming came in later. Fleming. I brought him in. That's the only one. All the rest have come in since my deal. There have been some that have come in and left, too, into here, but it's been gone. When Webb came here, I mean, it's not Webb. When Weber came here, Vanderwood came here, too. He was here at the time. And, oh, wait a minute, I forgot the two additional ones that we had. After Webb, and Ridge came in the Renaissance. Rader, and who was the French Revolution? The Frenchman? Oh, he's still here.
I don't know.
Oh, yes, you do. He's here. What's... He's done some work, by the way. Turned out to be a little bit better, although he was the one that is more in politics and things of that nature. And, yeah, he's still here. He teaches the French Revolution. Ah, you can find that out, though.
Okay.
And put that in here. Yes, and he's still with us during the time. Cooks was brought in earlier. Not earlier. See, Rader, I don't know why I can't. I know his name very well. He's still here. Cooks came in right afterwards from the Far East, from Japan. He was brought in by, I guess, Merrill. But they were together for quite a while before Merrill died. When Lewis died, I had to take over his seminar. Jolly Leonard was the first to retire for mandatory age. Then Leslie died. It was Heppner who changed the system in order to get rid of some of the ones that weren't exactly with him, to make the chairmanships no longer permanent as they were, heads, as we call them, but to 3-year terms, which has been since then. Heppner, by the way, began to change when he got into the system. And he began to look with more favor. He became a great friend of mine, especially in his later days, and who had no objection to my work, although at first he was opposed to it, because I was opposed to his cheapening of the education degree, but he says that's not a part of the problem when he got an EDD rather than the other, and brought in a lot of them that got their degrees later on. But many things that happened under Heppner, which I suppose are good.
Do you remember how long he remained prisoner?
Heppner was 1952 is when Love came in, who succeeded him. That's in 52. And Love came in, was it 34, I think, or 35, one of the two. Heppner came in 30, I thought it was 34.
Oh, that's all right.
It might have been 35.
I can check. The
end of there. And he was here until 52. That I know very carefully during the time. Among the things that happened during that time, let me see now. I got sidetracked for a short time on my California materials from the French archives and began to publish my French consular correspondence in California Historical Society Quarterly. They later on reprinted and made the first book of mine, which was really a reprint of part of it, called The Inside Story of the Gold Rush, into there. But my first real book that had to do with California, of course, was the French activities in California, which the Stanford University Press published right after the war, 1945, I think. It might have been 42, but I think it was 45. In the meantime, I had done a great deal more work in my own field of research and publishing a great deal, with the most important publication being my two-part article on the Anglo-Spanish frontier on the upper Missouri, which appeared in the Mississippi Valley Historical Review, with my two very long articles in the Iowa Journal of History and Politics, which continued the story of the Anglo-Spanish frontier on the upper Mississippi and in the Iowa country, and with my collection of documentary publications on John Evans, which appeared in the Missouri Historical Review, in which appeared many other articles as well. Still under the Heppner regime and with the war in, I was ready to step out. And although I had read papers and been active in California and had attended the meetings of the Pacific Coast branch of the American Historical Association, which I had joined as a graduate student in 1922, and other meetings. I was active with the local historical society and with practically everything that had to do with any aspect of Latin American affairs and Jewish affairs in the 1930s in town. But exactly coinciding with Pearl Harbor. Pearl Harbor occurred on December the 7th of 1941. But my first attendance on the national meeting of the American Historical Association took place in that very month of December 1951 in Chicago, when I read my first paper before the National Association. Well, that was a terrible time. It took me more than 3 days, 4 days to get to Chicago because everything was being poured by the railroads here, and it took me a long time to get back. But that was my first experience on the national scale, and I have become many times, I've attended many of the association.
Boy, that was a memorable event.
That was the same time, that time. That paper, by the way, was published in the Mexico Historical Society in the next year. And I've been close to the big association ever since. In that sense, a little bit closer to the course to the Pacific Coast Branch. But in those days, the Pacific Coast Branch of Historical Association.